Thank you, Roz. My name's Jennifer. I'm an addict. Welcome to the warm-up act. It's good, this meeting. I really like this meeting because I sort of come when I'm feeling really disillusioned, when I'm going through one of those phases of feeling really disillusioned with recovery, and I think everyone's talking bullshit. So I come to this meeting and think, well, at least there's only two people's bullshit that I'm going to hear tonight. So you're just about to hear my bullshit. Not that this guy will be speaking bullshit. Not that I will be speaking bullshit. I'm going to be honest, because that's all I can be. That's what I can be in these meetings. And the honesty is that I always felt uncomfortable. I feel uncomfortable right now. I always felt uncomfortable with life from as far back as I can remember. And I didn't have a particularly good childhood, which probably contributed to it. But, my first sponsor says she had a lovely childhood. You know, there was absolutely nothing wrong with the amount of love and the treatment her parents gave her. You know, the only dysfunctional thing in her family was her, you know. So when I found drink and drugs, when I was sort of, when I started using and drinking regularly when I was 14, it was always around from a sort of Catholic, you know, Irish working class background. It was always around. It was like it became my thing rather than just finishing off my mum's gin and tonic. It became my thing at about 14. And it was great, you know. At first, it really dealt with that uncomfortableness, you know, and it dealt with the shyness I felt, and it dealt with the sort of constant, you know, criticism of myself in my head. It just kind of got rid of it for a while, and it helped me bond with people and make relationships with people. This is what I thought, you know, And I started dealing weed at that age, and, you know, that gave me kudos and got me into parties, and I thought, this is it, you know, this is it. And you know, everything else was going okay on the surface. I was always trying to seek approval by achieving whatever, and there was always this void inside that I never knew what it was about. And the social life and the drinking and the drugging that went with it became a way to forget about all of that for a while. And so I just increased the amount of time I was doing that stuff. And I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. In fact, I thought it was the best way of life. I thought people who didn't drink and use were boring, straight, conformists, you know. They wanted to have the perspective of life that society tells them to have, and, you know, I wanted to change my perspective, and, you know, I did that by just never being, you know, by the time I was 19, I was using daily, and, it didn't take very many years after that before I sort of very rarely was straight, was sober in my head, you know, and I thought I was just being normal and living life normally. And I went into the music industry because that justified my behavior completely. I gravitated towards people who, you know, were like that, because, you know, it was easing that despair that was creeping in, and yet the despair was kind of growing, you know. And so the progression that I can see now just continued, and I would always search for the new thing, the new substance, the new way of thinking, the new religion, the new way of life. And you know, I went into therapy and found out, yes, indeed, I did have a terrible childhood. So that just justified my using even more. And then I thought, you know, yeah, but if I blame, you know, a year later, I thought, well, if I blame my family, that's not going to get me anywhere. They keep telling me. So maybe it was a past life that something happened. So I got regressed into a past life, you know. And you know, that must be it. You know, I didn't. I took, you know, all the food out. I thought it's bound to be an allergy to tomatoes or something. You know, I took all the food allergies. You know, and I wasn't allergic to anything. I refute. There was this tiny, tiny voice inside going, "You're an addict." You know, the way you behave, the way you, even when you're trying, even when I was trying to control how much I was putting in my system, even when I was trying to keep it to evenings or, you know, until it got dark, you know, which is great in the winter because then you could start about 4 o'clock or, you know, stuff like that. I was obsessed about it all the time. I was obsessed about it from the time I got up. And so, you know, the denial of me being an addict was linked to the fact that I might have to give up, and I couldn't bear the thought of giving up. I came to a meeting, and I thought it was a cult. I told them all they were in a cult. This is all terrible, and I sort of ran outside crying. And inside, I think the thing that's strange, that I thought was strange about it, was that everyone was being nice to each other in the meeting. Everyone was like hugging each other, which was really weird. And like actually asking each other, "How are you?" And actually seeming like they wanted to know the answer, you know. And I suppose I wasn't used to that. The kind of world that I'd got myself into, the kind of people I was attracted to, were kind of cold people, you know, who weren't warm, you know, and weren't really interested in how I was. And if they were, I didn't want to know them. And so it got to a point that, you know, you wouldn't know unless, you know, you all know because you're here. You know, where I realized that the only thing that I hadn't tried was this, was 12-step, was abstinence, was doing what I was told, was sort of leaping over the barriers that I had about the word God in the steps and that I heard in the meetings. I still have huge barriers about. I still don't believe in God. And, you know, it reminded me of my Catholic upbringing and, you know, and I had a lot to get over. You know, I had a lot to, you know, that word in the step four, moral, whose morals? You know, some white Christian male morals, they're not my morals, you know. And I thought, you know, actually this is, you know, recovery has been about me finding out what my morals are and that they change. And that to accept the change of them is much easier than battling against it and trying to be somebody I'm not. And that's what my using was all about. And so I sort of decided that I'd try and do what I was told for the first time in my life. I really did understand that, you know, my thinking had got me nowhere. It got me to a place where I was suicidal and skint and in trouble and physically fucked and alone. And I thought I'll just do as I'm told for the first time in my fucking life. And I started listening, you know, and yeah, I went into treatment. I couldn't stay clean in the rooms. I know a lot of people who have. Most of my friends have. I couldn't stay clean for more than a couple of weeks. So I went to treatment, and there was a really hardcore treatment centre. They told me that I had a fear of being loved, and that the reason why I had this fear was because it came with responsibility. It came with the responsibility of me looking after myself and me loving someone back. And I couldn't do either of those things. And they told me that, you know, I can't hate myself as I do, because if I'm honest with people, and they don't hate me as much as I hate me, then I'm just outvoted. It's clearly my thinking that's wrong. I'm clearly not this monster that I, you know, it really did swing between being the, you know, the second coming, the genius, and the complete monster that was going to bring everyone down with her. And I just couldn't accept mediocrity. I couldn't accept that I might be somewhere in between, and that I was normal and that I was like everyone else. And I really had thought all my life I was special and different. I thought that in my family, and I thought that when I came to meetings for the first time. And so I began to listen to similarities, and that was the amazing thing. When I started hearing stuff, people were saying stuff. People that I would look at on the street and judge and think I would have nothing in common with, they would say stuff that I'd never heard before, apart from in my own head. You know, they would say, I felt adopted when I was a kid. I really thought I was adopted, you know. And when I said that to my normal friends, they thought I was mad. And I never said it again. And I came to a meeting and this middle-aged guy in the corner said it. And I just thought, oh my God. You know, and I started hearing this stuff about the huge ego, the low self-esteem, the extreme thinking, the negative obsession, the self-hatred, the resentments, you know, the thinking that I was a victim, thinking that, I could never see if someone treated me badly that I might have done something. My behavior in the past might have led to them treating me badly, you know. Even if it was me being nice and expecting something back, I could never see that every time I was hurt, it was something, there was some largely something that I had done in that. And so when when I got out of treatment, I just threw myself into the meetings, and because I knew my default still is to isolate and self-destruct, and I knew that I had to, and I just stuck my hand up and got commitments, and that really helped with my shyness and my thinking that I could only bond with people when chemically aided, you know. And slowly I began to connect with people and began to connect with the meetings, and that's where my higher power has come, you know. The steps have worked so much for me, so much more than anything else I've tried. That I now have faith in this, and I fought it every step of the way. And I'm, you know, the most cynical questioning, here I go again, the most cynical questioning person in the world. I'm sure you all think that. And, you know, and that's my higher power now is, you know, it's recovery, it's this program, it's connecting. It's connecting when I feel alone, and it's connecting when I feel uncomfortable and telling someone I feel uncomfortable. And it's connecting when I help someone. And it's connecting when I just get up and do. And I think for years, in the end of my using, I just sat around and thought, if I can change my thinking, then my action will change. If I change my thinking, if I think about it long enough, I'll wake up one day and be the perfect person. I'll wake up at 6 o'clock and go out for a run, and then I'll do an hour of yoga, and then I'll go and run my own business, which is expanding into a multinational. And it never happened, and I couldn't work out why it never happened. And so in recovery, I've sort of been told that it's the action that changes the thinking and the feelings, not the other way around. And I never knew that before. And so I've done that slowly, and it is working. It is working. And, you know, if I don't go out and relapse to light, I'll be 5 years in a month or two. And it's been incredible. It's not been the boring journey I thought it was going to be. It's horrifically eventful emotionally. You know, I have things, loving relationships, relationship with my family that I never had before. I never even thought I deserved or even wanted. And, you know, I'm more myself than someone else. And so I'm still, you know, I'm just become more me because I'm finding out who that is. And so I think, you know, everyone here has struggled, everyone here has gone through some pain, and, you know, if you think you're different in what you're going through, just check it out with someone else, and you'll probably find out that you're not. And if someone else has survived it, that kind of means that, you know, we're all going to. And thank you for listening. Oh, okay.